Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Shingles Audio Collection, Volume 7, by Robert Bevan, Steve Wetherill, and John G. Hartness, narrated by Cassandra Miles and Cal Wembley. Part 1, The Mummy's Curse, by Robert Bevan. 1.
Settle down, class,
said Mr. Bernard, our history teacher, standing next to some kind of big fancy box.
I've got a surprise for you today.
We all stopped talking and sat down on our milk crates, excited to find out what was in the box. I hoped it was our new school mascot. School spirit just ain't been the same since Gary the Gator ate Tommy Shepherd. Nobody much liked Tommy before that, but they was really sore at him after Gary died. He had no business carrying that much heroin on him if he couldn't sell it before recess.
What's in the box? Asked Wendy Peters. Is it one of them naked dolls like they sell in Hello Titty?
Mr. Bernard covered his crotch with a piece of paper and stepped behind the box.
Only one can hope. My cousin Earl hijacked what he thought was a semi full of immigrants, but it turned out to be some kind of museum exhibition.
He held up the paper he'd been using to cover his crotch.
Says here it's from Egypt.
I raised my hand.
Yes, Shana, what is it?
Where's Egypt? I asked. Mr. Bernard walked over to the Louise gas station map he had pinned over the blood stain on the wall and stared at it for a while.
Well, I don't see it anywhere on here, so I reckon it's at least more than two counties away.
My classmates and I all exchanged looks, our eyes and mouths agape with wonder and anticipation. I ain't never seen nothing so exotic in my life. While Mr. Bernard was jamming a crowbar under the box's lid, a piece of paper fell off the top of the box and landed at my feet. I picked it up.
Is this important?
Mr. Bernard stopped struggling with the lid for a second and peered at me over his glasses.
What is that?
A piece of paper. It fell off the...
Is it the Bible?
I hadn't looked at the paper yet, but I was almost sure the Bible was more than one page long.
I don't think so.
If you learn nothing else at this school, learn this. The only important thing anyone ever wrote on paper was when Jesus said we're all supposed to hate colored people and queers.
I gave the paper a quick scan, but couldn't find anything about Jesus, colored people, or queers. But important or not, it was something to pass the time while I waited for Mr. Bernard to pry open the box lid, so I gave it a more thorough reading. Caution. Do not, under any circumstances, remove the amulet from around this mummy's neck. The stone within it binds the Pharaoh's soul to the spirit realm. If it is removed, he will rise to live again in death when the sun sets. Forward this letter to 10 people in the next 5 minutes, or Jesus will hate you. I raised my hand. Mr. Bernard sighed.
What is it, Shania?
I think maybe you ought to read this. It seems...
For the last time, reading is for commies and lesbians. Do you hate America?
No, sir. But there's a warning about...
They have to put those on there to cover their ass. It's just a bunch of left-wing propaganda nonsense, like the expiration date on food, or age of consent, or how you can't perform surgery without a GED. If young people start filling their heads with all that baloney, this will turn into a country like Puerto Rico or Africa. Is that what you... Oh, here it is.
Something on the box snapped, and Mr. Bernard finally lifted the heavy lid. His wrinkled face was bathed in a soft golden light.
What is it? Asked Archie Finn. What do you see?
Mr. Bernard chuckled.
I see a trip to the pawn shop, followed shortly by a visit to Judd's Tits and Wings.
What?
Huh?
Said Mr. Bernard.
Oh, nothing.
He took something from the box and shoved it down the front of his pants, but I couldn't see what it was.
Gather around, children. Come take a look at this.
All the students rushed toward the front of the classroom to get a look inside. I took a moment to put the mysterious piece of paper in my backpack, so I was one of the last ones to leave my milk crate. I was one of the shortest kids in my class, so it was hard for me to see anything with everyone bunched up so close together. Whatever was in the box smelled like it had been in there since before Jesus carried the Constitution down from Mount Rushmore. Or it might have been full of my dad's old sneakers. The other kids gazed in awe, but I couldn't see nothing. "What is it?" I asked.
"Come and see, Shania," said Mr. Bernard. "There's room for you between my legs."
That was awful kind of him. I felt bad for having sassed him before. Grateful for his offer, I crawled under his legs and stood up in front of him. But I was so excited that I bumped my head against the pill bottle he was excitedly trying to open. Little blue pills spilled all over the floor.
"Son of a bitch," cried Mr. Bernard. "Stupid girl."
I knelt down to help pick up the pills, but the other students had already scooped them all up. "I'm sorry," I said to Mr. Bernard. "Did you need those?"
"I wouldn't if you were prettier," he sighed.
"Oh, well, I suppose I'll have to make a stop at the pharmacy before Judd's tits and wings. Now, everyone take a look inside the box."
I turned around to find a vaguely human-shaped mass of white fabric strips that reminded me of my mother in the hospital after the meth lab fire.
"What is that?"
asked Rodney Fisher.
"That's something folks used in the cities up north," said Mr. Bernard. "It's called toilet paper."
Rodney laughed.
"It don't look like a toilet. Can I try to take a shit in it?"
Mr. Bernard smiled at him sympathetically.
"Stupid child, that ain't how it's used." "Then what do you do with it?" "I've only ever heard about it. This is the first time I've seen it up close. But my understanding is that you use it to wipe your ass after you take a shit."
The students broke into a cacophony of questions.
"Please," said Mr. Bernard. "One at a time, raise your hands."
He pointed at someone behind me.
"Alex, what's your question?"
"So the Egyptianese people all had really clean asses?" asked Alex Walden. "Then how did they keep wolves from attacking them?"
Mr. Bernard chuckled.
"Perhaps that's why there aren't any Egyptianese people around today. Next question."
He pointed to someone else.
"Sheldon."
"My wiener feels funny," said Sheldon Miles.
Mr. Bernard sighed.
"Did you eat one of my pills?"
"No, sir."
"Really?"
Sheldon looked at the floor.
"I thought it was a Skittle."
"Go to the teacher's lounge. You'll find some magazines next to a rainwater barrel."
"Yes, sir. Thank you."
Sheldon ran out of the classroom with both hands over his wiener.
"Are there any other questions?"
asked Mr. Bernard. I raised my hand. He rolled his eyes.
"Yes, Shania. What brilliant question would you like to dazzle the class with now?"
"Why is it shaped like a person?"
"Oh, well, that's actually a less stupid question than I expected coming from you."
My cheeks suddenly got real warm. I wasn't used to being complimented like that. "Thank you, Mr. Bernard."
"Everybody knows that Egypt has always been populated by white people, much like America. But that's not where the similarities end. Much like in the glory days of our own country, the Egyptianese used to bring slaves in from Africa."
"Yes, sir," I said, fearing he'd perhaps misunderstood my question. "But what's that got to do with..."
"I'm getting to that, Shania."
After quieting me with a stern look, he continued.
"This was all back in ancient times, before soap operas and Tupperware parties, so women didn't have nothing to do while their men was out fighting wars and harvesting sand. Fearing their wives would wander off and get lost without anyone to gossip to, Egyptianese men formed their toilet paper in the shape of a person to keep them company."
"That's really smart," I said, wishing I had a toilet paper friend at home to talk to. Josh Farmer laughed.
"Sure, at least until it's all covered in shit."
The rest of the class joined in the laughter. Even Mr. Bernard cracked a smile.
"You're more right than you know, Josh."
Josh stopped laughing.
"What? Really? Of course. Toilet paper doesn't last forever, after all. So what did the Egyptianese do with it after it was covered in shit?"
Several students shouted out their guesses at once.
"Use it as a scarecrow."
"Lawn ornaments."
"Eat it, eat it."
Quiet down," said Mr. Bernard. "Your ideas are all equally moronic. Fortunately, the Egyptianese people were smarter than you."
"What did they do?"
I asked, unable to contain my curiosity. Why, they would sell them to underprivileged families who couldn't afford real slaves, of course.
Wow, I said. That was really kind of them.
Yes, they were a people known far and wide for their generous nature. Now, before we leave, who would like to see a demonstration of how this toilet paper was used?
My hand shot up like a Pop-Tart in the toaster for Thanksgiving dinner. All the other kids raised their hands, too. Mr. Bernard chuckled.
Lucky for you kids, I had chili for lunch today.
We all cleared out of his way as he pushed his desk up next to the big box. He climbed up on top of it, pulled down his pants, and lowered his bare backside onto the ancient toilet paper person's left hand. That was pretty much how I'd figured it worked, so I foolishly assumed that was the end of the demonstration. But Mr. Bernard let out a small moan as he kept on lowering himself down. He didn't stop until the toilet paper person's arm was elbow deep in his rear.
Oh, yeah,
he said between heavy, labored breaths.
That's it. Get up in there.
Everyone gawked at him with awe and amazement, except for Josh Farmer.
That's nothing,
said Josh.
I've seen my mom do that with a traffic cone.
Mr. Bernard suddenly came out of what appeared to be a trance-like state and scowled down at Josh.
Everyone's seen your mom do this with a traffic cone. At least anyone who's been to Judd's Tits and Wings on a Tuesday afternoon. Class dismissed. Get out of here, all of you, and don't forget your homework for the weekend. Bring back the film from the secret cameras I had you install in your mother's bathrooms.
But, Mr. Bernard, I said, I don't have a mother. She accidentally drowned in the trunk of a car that rolled into the lake last year. Mr. Bernard smiled gently at me.
I know, dear. Don't worry. I've already marked you down for an F.
2. Why do you always walk home this way? Asked Sheldon Miles, who sometimes walked home with me when he missed the bus. I knew he'd be late today when class ended, and he still hadn't come back from the teacher's lounge. Mr. Bernard's little blue pill must have really done a number on him. He was waddling and wearing his backpack in the front, the straps loosened to let it hang way down low.
It's a lot quicker to go down Main Street past Hello Titty.
I like walking past Lake Carcinogen, I said. He looked down at the ditch we were walking beside.
Because of the heat from the chemical waste?
I shrugged. That too.
What else then?
You'll think it's silly.
Not as silly as the magazines in Mr. Bernard's desk drawer, said Sheldon. Ain't one of the people in them had a stitch of clothes on.
What?
I swear to God, they was all naked as the day they fell out of their mama's hoo-has and into the toilet, and they was all sticking the strangest things up each other's butts.
That does seem pretty silly, I said. What were the articles about? Sheldon shrugged.
There weren't much in the way of articles. It was mostly pictures.
We walked along in silence for a few minutes before I got up the nerve to confide in him. My mom's in that lake, I finally said.
I thought old man Henry dragged that car out of the lake for scrap metal.
He did. That's how we found her. Dad told him to just toss her back in there, though. It was cheaper than a funeral, and he said that's what she would have wanted anyway.
It's nice, as far as lakes go. I reckon it's better than being dumped in some boring old lake where the water don't even glow.
Folks always say it's the chemical waste that gives off all this heat, I said. And I know that's probably true, but I like to believe my mom's spirit is doing her part, too. Keeping me warm while I walk home on a cold winter day. I turned away from Sheldon. You must think I'm such a loser.
I don't feel that way at all about you, Shania. As a matter of fact, sometimes I get a strange feeling in my wiener when I'm walking home with you, even when I don't eat Mr. Bernard's pills.
I felt so embarrassed as I wiped a tear from my eye, hoping he couldn't see me. You're just saying that to make me feel better.
No, I ain't, insisted Sheldon. I know exactly how you feel. Why do you think I spend so much time down by the Nathan Bedford Forest Memorial Stadium?
I thought it was so you could collect French fries that fall under the bleachers during the monthly pig-fucking contests.
That's what I tell folks. And it's true. We gotta eat, after all. But the real reason is because my daddy's buried in one of the concrete support columns.
I heard your daddy ran off with that dog-face girl from the circus.
My mom made up that story so folks wouldn't think he was dead. She said everyone would assume it was the herpes that did him in, and that wouldn't be good for her whoring business. Mrs. Beasley told me I ought to think about whoring on career day, but my dad says I ain't pretty enough for it.
Sheldon smiled at me.
I don't think that's true at all. My mom took me to the crack house she works out of on Bring Your Son to Work Day, and you're prettier than any of the other women working there.
I felt another wave of warmth come over me, and it wasn't from my mom's spirit or the chemical waste. Sheldon and I walked the rest of the way to the trailer park in silence. I walked close to him, hoping he might take my hand, but his hands were occupied keeping his backpack held securely over his crotch.
I enjoyed walking home with you, I said when we got to my trailer.
Me too, said Sheldon.
Maybe we could walk to school together tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow's Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I felt so stupid. He must think I'm the biggest idiot in the world.
Maybe we could walk somewhere else?
I smiled at him. I'd like that.
Great, said Sheldon. I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
I waved goodbye and watched him run to his trailer. When he was gone, I noticed how hard and fast my heart was beating. I felt light and dizzy, like I might fall over or float up into the air. It was a feeling I'd never experienced before. All I wanted to do was go to bed so that tomorrow would come all the more quickly.
Hi, Dad, I shouted as I opened the door. I'm home.
Keep it down, he called back from the bathroom. I can't hear the TV.
I looked over at the blank screen on the television in our living room.
The TV ain't on.
Well, then turn it the fuck on, Shania. I swear to God, sometimes I think you just might be as dumb as your mama.
I turned on the TV. There was an episode of America's Most Shameless Whores Do Anything to Be on TV playing, but I'd already seen it. I turned up the volume so Dad could hear it from the bathroom.
Ready with those tasers, ladies? The last woman standing gets this Shoney's gift card.
Holy shit, does that say $50?
I suppose it does. There's probably like $7 or $8 still on it.
After the first taser fired, it was all just a bunch of zapping and screaming. Dad laughed as he emerged from the bathroom and zipped up his jean shorts.
I love it when they shit themselves. Stupid bitches ought to know better than to wear white pants to a taser fight.
Did you have a nice day? I asked.
I'm about to. Where's my crack?
Oh no. In all the excitement of watching Mr. Bernard's toilet paper demonstration, I'd completely forgotten to go to my locker and get the crack I'd scored from Willie Johnson during recess.
I'm sorry, Dad. I left it in my locker.
God damn it, Shania. You know I need that for my glaucoma.
School might still be open. I'll go back right now.
Too fucking right you will. Break in if you have to, but don't you come back here without my crack.
I won't. Don't worry.
And pick me up a copy of the latest Hustle Whore on your way back.
You got it, Dad.
I went back outside and headed back to school. 3. Since I was in a hurry, I took the direct route back to school. Mr. Bernard said he had some important business to take care of, so I hoped he'd still be here to let me in. Unfortunately, the parking lot was empty when I arrived 20 minutes later. Sure enough, the doors were all locked. How was I going to get in there? I didn't know the first thing about breaking into a school. It couldn't be all that different than when Dad ran out of smokes at 4 in the morning and broke into the Quick Fix. Hoping to apply the same methods, I thought back on how he'd done it. My heart sank when I remembered that he'd driven his truck through the wall. I didn't have a truck, so it was back to the drawing board. I stood outside the school for almost an hour, trying to think of a way in and hoping that a faculty member might come back to get something they'd forgotten, when my luck finally turned around. Shattering glass startled me as a desk flew through the window of Mr. Bernard's classroom. If I'd been standing a couple of feet to my left,
It might have taken my head clean off. But there was no point in dwelling on what might have been, or worrying about the anguished screams of whoever was still throwing furniture around. Instead, I decided to look at the bright side. I now had a way into the building. I walked up to the shattered window and looked inside. Mr. Bernard's classroom was a disaster. Smashed desks and torn papers were scattered all over. Judging by the screams and crashing noises coming from across the hall, whoever was behind all this destruction had moved on to Miss Conway's room. Not wanting to disturb someone who was clearly upset about something, I climbed through the window as quietly as I could. But there was a small lull in the carnage across the hall, just as my shoes came down to crunch glass shards on the floor. Just my luck.
"Who goes there?"
boomed a deep voice from Miss Conway's room. I thought if I kept quiet, the person might ignore me and go back to destroying the school. But the silence only continued. I'd already wasted an hour trying to get into the building. If I kept waiting around here any longer, there was no telling how bad my dad's glaucoma would flare up. My only chance was to walk as quietly as possible to my locker, get Dad's crack, and get out of there before I was spotted. I held my breath as I took the first step toward the door. In hindsight, it would have been wise of me to look where I was going, so as to avoid stepping on the whoopee cushion Mr. Bernard had confiscated from Todd Jennings earlier in the week. When I looked up at the doorway, I couldn't believe what I saw. The toilet paper man was standing there, his entire left arm coated in poo, seething as he stared at me with glowing red eyes.
"Who the fuck are you?"
he bellowed. My name's Shania, I said. Shania Crawford. He didn't look any less enraged by my answer, so I thought it best to keep the conversation rolling until he calmed down. "What's your name?"
"Huh?"
His eyes faded to a dull red glow as his posture relaxed.
"I am Methusephus the First, son of Nehofretep, king of Upper and Lower Egypt."
"That sure is a long name. Can I just call you Meth?"
I suppose so.
I smiled at him. "Great, you can call me Shania."
"Are you the one who has awakened me from my eternal slumber?"
"No, that was my teacher, Mr. Bernard. I tried to tell him not to take your necklace, but he wanted to sell it at the pawn shop."
"That is no ordinary necklace,"
said Meth.
"That is the amulet of Bektenhach, a powerful artifact that contains within it the power to give life and to take it."
"That sure does sound powerful, all right."
"Where is this Mr. Bernard?"
"I was hoping he'd still be here, but that clearly ain't the case. I reckon he's probably getting ready for his big night out at Judd's Tits and Wings."
"Take me there."
"I'd be happy to, but I got to deliver some crack to my dad first."
"Take me there, now."
"It won't do you no good to go there now. Mr. Bernard won't even be there for a couple of hours. You can come with me or stay here and tear the school apart. It's up to you." Meth's eyes glowed bright red with rage, then dimmed again.
"Very well,"
he said.
"Let us attend to your pointless mortal errand with haste, then seek the amulet."
"Well, you can't go out looking like that. If a cop sees your arm, they might mistake you for a colored person and shoot you."
"A colored person?"
"Don't worry. I'm pretty sure Mr. Bernard keeps a trench coat and hat in his desk for when he goes to the park after school to show kids his wiener." Unfortunately, Mr. Bernard's desk was turned over with the drawers closed against the floor. "I need to get in this desk. Would you mind helping me lift?" Meth screamed like his soul was on fire as he pummeled the desk with both fists, leaving brown smear marks on the crack in wood with every left-handed punch. It didn't seem like the most efficient way of getting access to the drawers, but I could see how it would eventually be effective. When most of the desk was little more than a pile of poo-slathered splinters, I was able to turn over the part of it I needed by myself. Sure enough, Mr. Bernard's coat and hat were exactly where I expected to find them. The front of the trench coat was kind of stiff and crusty,
and it smelled like Dad's laundry bag on our bi-monthly trip to the laundromat. But it wasn't quite as pungent as the musty odor of decay and poo coming from meth. He probably wouldn't even notice it.
"What manner of clothing is this?"
asked Meth.
"Do you take me for some swine-fucking peasant? Royal blood flows in my veins."
"Around these parts, the top swine-fuckers in the county are treated like royalty. My dad said it would be a solid career path for me to go down, if only I had the looks for it."
"Hmm. Very well."
Meth allowed me to help him put on the coat and hat. "There you go," I said, taking a step back to admire Meth in his new outfit. "Ain't you just a picture of class and sophistication?"
"Enough, dawdling. Lead me out of this place."
"Not so fast. We got to visit my locker first to get Dad's crack."
"Hurry, then. My torment grows with every second I am doomed to live in death."
That sounded unpleasant, so I jogged to my locker, with Meth easily keeping up, in spite of his limping gait. When we got to the section of green lockers, I pulled the card out of my pocket that I'd written my locker number on. 357, I said aloud, then scanned all the green lockers until I found the right one. Now, what was that darn combination?
"Yah!"
cried Meth, before savagely pounding his poo-covered fist against my locker. The smashing of flesh against steel echoed up and down the empty school corridor until my locker door succumbed to the pounding and fell off its hinges, clattering onto the floor. I laughed to myself as I reached for the bag of crack, then put it in my pocket.
"Does my agony amuse you?"
asked Meth, his eyes glowing with fury. "No, that's not it. I just remembered my locker combination is all. 357. I made it the same as my locker number so I wouldn't forget it." Meth sighed.
"Guide me at once from these dismal catacombs to your peasant dwelling so that we may complete your pitiful mission. Then move toward ending my suffering."
"We've got to make one more stop first." His red eyes flared with anger.
"What that you were not the keeper of the knowledge I seek, I would paint these vomit-colored walls red with your living blood."
I frowned at the walls. Meth wasn't wrong in that they could probably do with a fresh coat of paint, but I didn't know if I could spare that much blood. Maybe that was an ancient Egyptianese thing. "We got actual paint in this country," I told him. "It comes in all sorts of colors. Maybe after we get your necklace back, I can take you to Hard Hank's Home Improvement."
"Quiet, your infernal yapping, and lead me from this place."
Mindful of Dad's glaucoma, I hurried to the front entrance of the school. It wasn't until I tried to push open the doors that I remembered why I had to enter through the broken window. "It's locked," I said. "We'll have to go back to Mr. Bernard's room and go out the..." Meth pounded on the doors with both fists so hard that it rattled the trophy case near the reception desk. Our school's claim to international fame, the trophy that Lumpy Miles had won back in 1973 for the world's biggest gob of phlegm, crept dangerously close to the edge of the shelf. It stopped in the nick of time when Meth finally succeeded in punching the door open. I let out a huge sigh of relief. "Good job, Meth," I said. "Let's get out of here." 4. The sun was starting to set by the time we got to Main Street, and the classy ladies of the town were all out showing off the latest fashions.
"Hey there, hot stuff,"
one of them said as she approached me and Meth. She was wearing a red patent leather miniskirt and a leopard print halter top that showed off the nice big cesarean scar and tattoo of a cartoon child peeing on a Ford logo.
"My name's Crystal."
"I'm Shania," I said.
"That's fine, honey. I got 7 or 8 kids at home you can play with while your daddy and I take care of business."
She winked at Meth.
"What do you say, good looking? You looking for some action?"
Meth's eyes glowed red with annoyance.
"I seek the amulet of Bektenhach."
"That's quite a case of pink eye you got there," said Crystal. "I'm afraid I'm going to have to up my rate to $7.
Meth raised his left arm toward her.
"Be gone from my sight, foul temptress."
Crystal frowned at his brown hand. Oh, I didn't know you was colored. Try me again at around 4 in the morning after a few...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?